definite difference in the way that men and women parent. Having three of my own, I have discovered this. That I, with my children, even the girls, would tend to allow them to do a little bit more, probably, than what Penny would do. Do you know what I mean? So it's not so much I don't think that things aren't dangerous. I just think they need to try these things out and learn for themselves. And so we go to the same place every year in France. It's great. Really enjoy it. It has this thing called Yuppie Land, right? Which doesn't actually mean anything in French. And so, but the kids love it. Basically, it's like, can you turn me down a wee bit? Just booming a sign. In Yuppie Land, what happens is it's basically loads and loads of inflatables, massive inflatables, and bouncy things and trains. And like, it's about, I don't know, I mean, it's a wee bit of a rip-off. It's €8 in for the day. And seriously, you could leave your kids there if you're, not that we would, or have ever thought about it much. You could leave them in there and they could blatter around. But the thing is, they're not just bouncy castles. These things are like 2 and 3 stories high. I mean, they're huge, absolutely massive. And I remember last year with Hope, and Hope's our little fairy sort of, oh, everything's girly, she's 4, and, you know, princesses, and, you know, everything's wonderful, and daddy, and, you know, and last year we took her to Yuppie Land, and Ben is tearing around sort of skydiving Superman style off these things. And I looked at wee Hope, and she was like, you know, oh, man, give us a go. And there's one of these ones where you go right up, okay? And it has a big slide, but to get up, you have to climb up things, you know the ones I mean, and it has a rope. But by the time you get to the top, it's almost vertical, right? And so the last bit, it's like that there, and I was like, go for it, Hope. Your ma's not here. She'll never know, all right? This is, so, as I often say, this is kind of part story, part confession. And so, you know, it's like, so Hopey has a go, 3/4 of the way up. Slides, boom, straight down, but on that bit, not the vertical bit. And I'm going, go on, Hope, you can do it. So she's determined in tears and snollers, but she just wants to come down. I'm going, go on, Hopey. You know, and at one point, though, you know, there's like a wee crowd almost gathering around the bottom going, come on, Hope, allez, Hope. You know, all these French people going, you can do it, you know. And you know what? In the middle of it, I thought, flip me. Am I right wise in the head? If she tumbles from the top, this is shocking. And I thought, oh, don't be stupid, she'll be fine. And the point for me was this. She gets to the top, she climbs over, her wee bum stuck in the air, just lying there. And all these people, honestly, at the bottom went, yes! She's up, and I was thinking, oh God, she's got to get down again. This is going to be a nightmare. And the point is this, that there are times, even with our own kids, where we have them in situations that will push them. And the thing for me is, I knew fine rightly, if we Hope had got to the top and got herself back down, that would be her. You know, they do it once, and then they just do it again and again and again. And it doesn't matter the third time of getting to the top if they happen to fall and not go all the way to the bottom, because they've already done it and been there. Isn't that right? So they just go round again and round again. And I remember I was thinking, part of me was going, oh, flip, this could all end in tears and a trip to the hôpital, as they say, you know, GCSE French there coming out, Jean-Luc, oui, le hôpital, and, you know, with her Jean Bacassé and all that, you know, trying to think that through. I speak French, I'm just kidding. As you could tell, they're el fluente. But there was something in me that said, you know, she's got to do this, because if she gets through it, she's going to love it. And the disappointment of her having to walk away, even if she was 3 at that stage, walking away from a big, big challenge, because it's okay, a 2-story bouncy castle when you're our age, our size, is big enough. See, when you're that size, it's a huge obstacle. But the delight on her face, Penny's going, you did what last year? You didn't tell me this. And then she'll do it again this year. The point is this, there are times in your life where you will be in a situation that will feel like it's too big, I can't do it, and everything within you wants to let go of the rope and fall and just go, that's enough. But I promise you, I'm going to finish off, not this series, but as the footballers say, it's a game of 2 halves, Gov. You know, or do footballers say that? They do, thank you. It's a game of 2 halves. I'm going to just finish off today on some of the points that I've been making for the last 2 weeks, just to bring in a few more. And then in the next couple of weeks, what I'm going to do is actually look at the tools that you need to stand in the grace of God. Because often what I've said is, and you really need to listen to last week if you want to get the most out of this week, because there are times in our lives where I said last week that Everything that God does and asks us to do has the express purpose of us learning how to guard our hearts. Why? Because when you guard your heart, your life flows from what you believe on the inside of you. And in fact, what I went on to say is this, that what you behold in your life is what you become. So the Bible puts it like this. If you want to look at your life, and this is a challenge for me. If you look at relationships, and if you struggle with, say, let's say being judgmental and critical of people, and sitting in judgment over them and their actions, well, actually, what is happening is that is simply a reflection. You are beholding that in your life. And as you behold, what you look at is what you reflect into the world around you. Do you understand that? People go, well, it's not my fault, it's them, and it's just that. No, no, if you're looking at something and giving it your heart and your attention, you're simply reflecting that back. That's what it says in 2 Corinthians 3:18. What you behold is what you become. What you look at and what you give your attention to is what will you, that's what your life is going to look like. And so what I said last week is you've got to stay reflecting Jesus into your world and not just your own stuff. What I said last week is this. I said, you know, it's amazing in the book of Lamentations, there's encouragement. In Lamentations 1:9 says that she did not consider her destiny. This is Israel. Therefore, her collapse was awesome. And my point was this. If you don't consider the purpose that God has for your life and the calling that God has on your life, you will screw up. Oftentimes, life comes in at us like this, and we cannot see the wood for the trees, and we forget that we're all called for an incredible purpose with God. We forget the end goal because we get so mixed up on today's stuff, and when we don't consider our destiny, when we don't consider that everything that happens in life, every situation in life, every circumstance in life is simply a step towards your destiny, or if you choose it, a step away from your destiny, what will happen is when you don't consider the big purpose, the big calling that God has for you, then what happens as you walk away, you get disappointed. In David's life, this is the story that we've been looking at, that his circumstances were specifically, the things that came against him were specifically addressed that on distracting him from what he was called for. David was called to be king, and everything that tested David, all the circumstances that came into his life, contradicted directly the word that was spoken over him. Let me tell you, what does that mean for you? If you're struggling in a certain area and you struggle time and time again, maybe it's in your body with sickness, maybe it's in your mind, maybe it's in your heart, and you've no passion for God or whatever, and circumstances are hard, maybe you're just fed up with religion and church and all the rest of it. I don't know, but what I do know is this, that when something tests your life, it is because you have a calling in that area to overcome and to be used in the very thing that is coming against you. And without the perspective of that, what happens is today's circumstances overwhelm us. And then all the promises of God start to become nothing more than things that torture us, or they become for the other people who write books and speak at conferences, but we don't get to live it out. But you can learn to stand in the grace of God. You can learn to develop the strength of character that God was after. Because I've said that your calling and your purpose is all about being a king. The kingdom of God, see when we look at that movie and we see the Spirit of God today in the earth at work, it's not for wee boys and girls who run like that, get offended like that, can't stand for 2 minutes. That's not what God is looking for. He will love you all the same and provide for you and do all the rest of it, but your calling is a king. I want to be a man who, whenever sick people come into this church, that we're such a community of faith and grace and power that sickness and cancer goes before we even put our hands on people. Do you understand that? When people are standing in the presence of God, that depression is broken, anxiety is broken, that physical sickness is broken, because that is the kingdom. I want to be that church. I want you to be those people on a wet Tuesday in November when your world is crashing in, because that is the calling. Consider your destiny. When we don't consider our destiny, today's stuff becomes so immediate that we forget to stand. It's like whenever I said to David, it's like David, or the Lord says to David, if I can summarize it, every test that David has in his life, it's like God coming to him like he comes to you, and he says, David, I've anointed you to be king. Now, will you live with the heart of a king when the man that's in your position is trying to attack you and chase you and kill you? The guy that's trying to stop you reaching your destiny, in those moments, will you live with the heart of a king? Will you live with the heart of a king whenever your palace is just a cave in the desert? When your army is a bunch of rabble-rousers who eventually will reject you and kill you? Will you have the heart of a king when your very best friends disown you and turn you over to your enemy? Because David, if you'll have the heart of a king in those moments when everything lines up for you, I can trust you for more then. Will you have the heart of a king? Flip, I replay that in my head all the time, because that's real faith, not intellectual assent to ideas. Oh, I have faith, brother. Stroke my beard if I had one. And go, oh, yes, I understand what the word says about that. Oh, I love that bit of the Bible. Oh, yes. That's not faith. That's just guff. Sorry. Real faith is when everything else is going against you and everything is contradicting you, where you say before God, I will rule with the heart of a king, because that I'm considering my purpose. I'll rule with the heart of a king. Practical trust expressed in what we do, not what we say, is our response to who God is and what we know of him. David's actions proved that he believed God's promises over his life. He just didn't talk about them, just didn't wax lyrical about them, just didn't hold them over other people. When it all came against him, David learned this, that every circumstance that comes my way, I have my choice to make. Will I use it to step towards my destiny in God and climb that yuppie land thing? Or will I use it to blow me over and step away? David resolved that everything that came against him was not God trying to chastise him, or not God, but was God saying, I'm trying to build character in you. Now consider your destiny. Consider your calling. I'm trying to get you up that rope onto the top so that you can sail down, but you're going to need to have to learn to stand. That was almost English, that sentence. Too many words in there, wasn't there? You're going to have to learn to stand. So here's my quick points for today, because today's quick. Everyone said, thank goodness. Just a wee bit too quick. You should have thought about that for a few more seconds. Here's the thing. I'm going to make three quick points today. Number one, God never sets you up to fail. Number two, the cornerstone of standing in the grace of God is the goodness of God. And number three, don't ever, ever, ever run away. Because what we're going to do next week is we're going to say this, that the tools that I'm going to talk about, we're going to talk about thanksgiving and tongues and all this sort of stuff. And I said last week that you've got to understand the context for those, because those tools are simply things that God gives you to keep your heart connected to him. I'll talk about that more next week, because the more your heart is connected to God, the more you're going to reflect him, and that's what you'll become. But here is a huge truth. I remember a few years ago being on a holiday with Aaron Boyd, and we went to, it was the same place in France, and I'm an awful swimmer, and Boydo is a very good swimmer. And so what he did was, we were playing, me and Boydo playing on the sand. Does not sound all wrong. And yes, building sandcastles and all the rest of it. No, Boydo put me into this, we bought one of those blow up boat things. And he pushed me out into the water. Now, literally into the water, into the like, and then he swam after me like a shark. It was like Jaws, and I was paddling like a champion like this. And essentially, I got it to the point where I was in the water. And so what I did was I grabbed a boy, not a boy, but like a proper big round boy, okay, and held on tight for all I could. And I thought, do you know what, if it takes 12 hours, I'm hanging on to this sucker till the tide goes out and I can walk in, because I couldn't swim. Here's my point. See, when you're in the middle of the water, it's the last time that you want to learn how to swim. You learn how to swim before you're in the water and not when you're in the water. Now, here's the point for me, that David in the Bible, and you need to understand this, that when you're in the situation, many of us fail and give up because we don't think that we're equipped for the situation that we're in. But listen to me. God today has already prepared you for whatever you're going through. Listen to that point. Christians don't believe it. People don't believe it. They think that God puts them into the situation and they either sink or swim in it. God has given you the ability before the situation to stand in it. Why? Because God never sets his children up to fail. Never. Never, ever. It's a huge truth. David just didn't strengthen himself in grace in the situation. He was strengthened before the situation happened. This is an encouragement. What I'm trying to tell you this morning is this. In 1 Samuel 17:36, and when I do my David series, when he goes out to fight Goliath, he says, your servant has struck down both lions and bears, and this uncircumcised Philistine, whole big sermon in that one line, shall be like one of them, for he has defied the armies of the living God. Here's the point. Whenever you're in a situation, I need you to understand that the cornerstone of your life being the goodness of God is this, that every time you overcome in a small way, it prepares you for the bigger battle that God has for you up in front. But more importantly than this, every situation that you're in, you are prepared for now. Your choice is, will you stand in the grace of God, give thanks to God, speak and do everything you know and keep your heart connected to God, or will you fall over? This is an amazing truth for me. When things get too much, when things get hard, and when things get difficult, what I had to realize in my life was this. It wasn't that God was saying, Andrew, well, let's just see how you get on. He was putting me into situations or allowing situations to happen where he was trying to get me to realize that I already had what was required. I just didn't realize it. Hope already had the strength physically. She had the mentality of a go-getter, I'm going to do this. She just didn't realize until the situation was there in front of her that all those things could come together and she could do it. Do you understand this? Some of us think that God puts us into places simply to see if we will fall over or not. Let me tell you, God never does that. Let me just give you an idea. Whenever the children of Israel were leaving the Egypt after being in slavery, in Exodus 13, we read these verses. Then it came to pass that Pharaoh had let the people go, that God did not lead them by the way of the land of the Philistines, though that was near. For God said, lest perhaps the people change their minds when they see war and they return and then return to Egypt. So God led the people round by the way of the wilderness and the Red Sea. Here's my point. God didn't let his people face a challenge that they were not prepared for. He didn't let them face something that they were not prepared for. That's a good, loving father. For some of us, we've been praying and saying, God, I don't know whether I'm going to get out of this. I don't know why I'm in this situation. I don't know how this is going to change. And God whispers to you today and says, I prepared you before you had to face this. I've given you everything that you need. All the tools are at your disposal, and that's what we're going to talk about next week. But you are prepared. You do have what it takes. You're not going to sink under the waves. You're not going to not overcome. You are not going to see your victory. Why? Because I never put you somewhere that you are not prepared for. The point is, you may not see it yet, but a bit like me with my girl, I knew that she could do it. And if it had have been too much, honestly, I know I joked at the start, I would never have put her in that place as a dad. How much more does God then? What I'm trying to encourage some people today is look at your situation and instead of going, God, am I going to get through? Just say, God, I am going to get through because I'm prepared for it. I may not feel it. My heart may be telling me everything else. I may be absolutely bricking it, to use Belfast language. But you know what? In faith, I'm going to say, I am prepared right today with everything that I need to overcome. Why? Because my Father will never set me up to fail. What an incredible liberating truth. There's two truths for this. When you face difficulty, some of us just don't know whether we're going to get through it or it'll ever change. So I'm going to say, yes, you can. But the other point of this is this, that your breakthrough will be, I think somebody put it this way, that your ceiling today and our ceiling today becomes the floor for other people to stand on tomorrow. You get that? Your ceiling today, once you overcome, simply becomes the floor that you stand on. Things that you think, I can't get through this. I can't get through this. When I looked at Hope, 20 minutes later, after doing 40 repetitions, what was her ceiling? Was simply what she was standing on. She wanted to go on to the next biggest one, the higher one, because I can do that, Daddy. Why? Because that which was her ceiling became her floor. Why? Because she didn't run away. She knew that she could do it, and she knew that I would not let her fail. God never sets you up to fail. Not a good word. How do you stand then when everything seems like, oh my goodness, this is all a wee bit crazy? The cornerstone point two is this. The cornerstone is God's goodness. Why do you struggle in the middle of a crisis? Why do I struggle if God's already prepared me? Do you know why? Simple point. We allow the enemy to successfully distract us from this fact that we have already been prepared with what we need to overcome. You may feel blindsided. You may feel like things come out of nowhere. You may think like, what the heck is happening and how did that happen and will it ever change? But remembering that God has seen up ahead and prepared you makes a huge difference in how you respond to difficulty. What is the bedrock of an auto response to God and our situation? It's a burning conviction that God is good all of the time. Let me say that again. In the middle of difficulty, the person that you become who steps towards your calling and not away, that person has a burning conviction about the goodness of God always. That's why we preach it. If you're not grounded in the love of God, then hardship will shake you from your purpose and you will flounder. But your ability to connect with what God is doing hinges on who he is and remembering what he has done in your life. It's such a simple point, but I have to make it before we move on. Your auto response needs to be not bad theology of God is doing this in my life to teach me a lesson. God has brought, I'm going to explain this point in a minute. What happens is this. There's a bit of crazy theology around there that God works all things together for good and all this sort of stuff. That's not crazy, that's actually the Bible. Let me tell you how it's misinterpreted. That crazy theology, that Bible, all a wee bit wacko. Let me tell you what happens. In Mark chapter 6, shortly after Jesus has fed the 5,000, he puts the disciples onto a boat, and he says, I'm going to meet you on the other side. What happens is they come into a big storm, isn't that right? Jesus appears to them on the water, and he calms the storm. Now, it says that Jesus speaks to them. He said they had not understood about the loaves because their heart was hardened. Let me just explain what this means. That's a Greek word, poru, which means completely lacking sensitivity or spiritual perception. The actual word that we used for hardened is calloused. Anyone ever had a callus on their hand, right? Callus is a hard piece of skin that forms over a piece of your foot primarily. Is that right, Phil? God bless Wikipedia. But this is what happens. A constant irritation, constant friction, constant movement against your skin will form calluses. And that's what happens. That's the word that Jesus uses here. He says that if you're not careful, life will have a way when you're irritated and things are rubbing against you and there's pressure applied that your heart will become hardened and covered over so that you will not perceive spiritually what God is doing. When I was studying that this week, I thought, Flip, that's absolutely right. That's absolutely right in my life. If I'm not careful and keep the cornerstone of God's goodness paramount in my heart and in my focus, life will cause hardness to go over my heart. Does anyone understand what that means? And Jesus says they didn't understand why. Because they were bad people? No. Because they were awful, didn't have it? No. It's because simply in life, what had happened was time and time again, as pressure came, as hardship came, because the cornerstone for them at that stage was not God is good all the time, their heart became calloused. Now listen to me, this is a really important point. My point is this, that bad theology will say this, that God will create situations and circumstances that are evil in order to teach his children goodness. So God will make somebody sick in order that they learn how to be more Christ-like and holy. Can I say that is complete and utter bull? It is not in the Bible, and it is not found in the Bible. But so many people don't learn how to stand in the grace of God because what they think is, what we've been taught is no matter what goes on in our life, God is behind it. And God will use every situation to teach you something. Let me just explain the nuance of why that is wrong. God does not create evil. But listen to me, evil never limits his ability to bring about what he purposed for you. Do you get that? He doesn't create it, but it doesn't limit him. So God prepares you for circumstances. He builds strength into you and he gives you the tools to keep your heart connected to God. But he is never the cause of difficulty in their lives. He's not the kind of father who brings pain and sickness and torment and persecution in order to teach us to be more Christ-like. My point is this, whenever you're pursuing the purposes of God, whenever you're considering the destiny of God over your life. Whenever you're considering, like it says in Lamentations, what God has called you for, whenever you see every situation and circumstance as it comes your way as something that you can step into to build character so that you can be a king, what happens is this: every situation with the right heart, the right attitude, and the right purpose, God can use every situation to accomplish his purpose in your life then. Do you understand the difference, or am I making a right hash of this? The choice is this: God creates the bad things in order to teach us a lesson. My heart says, no, the cornerstone is goodness. This week, whenever things are coming against you, don't say, God, why did you bring this about? Say, God, this is the situation. Now, how do I consider my purpose? Rely on your goodness, keep myself focused, and reflect you back into it, and take a step towards my destiny and not a step away. Does that make sense? That's what I'm trying to say. The cornerstone has got to be God's goodness. Now, this is when verses in the Bible, like in Genesis 50, verse 20, it says, this is Joseph, when his brothers had thrown him into a pit and all this sort of stuff, and years and years and years of hardship. He says, as for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good, in order to bring it about as it is this day, to save many people alive. Horrible situation, and God meant it for good. See, that's been interpreted, and people go, God brings this stuff into your life because he's going to teach you in it. That's not what the verse actually means. Joseph here does not deny the choices that his brothers made and how it affected his life. But what he focuses on is this: that even though the choices of other people affected him, he had a superior belief and a superior way of thinking that, and a superior reality that their plans could not cancel out God's purpose for him. Does that make sense? If it doesn't, just go, no, it doesn't, and I'll say it again. It's such an important point. Does make sense? Thank God for that. What I'm trying to say is this: the cornerstone is God's goodness. God never, ever, ever creates evil and asks you to build character through it. What he says is, I've prepared you before circumstances come, and the evil will not limit my purpose in it. Does that make sense? I'll tell you why that makes a radical difference in my life. For too long, I was caught up on choices that other people made and how it affected me. And at times, I used to sit and think, I'm done. Infamy. Remember Kenneth Williams? Infamy, infamy. They've all got it in for me. You know? No? Anyone watch Carry On movies? Are you allowed to say that in church? Please, somebody say they watch Carry On films. One, two. The rest of you are liars. Oh, we wouldn't do that. We're far too busy hugging the altar rails and reading our Bibles for that nonsense. Infamy, infamy. They've all got it in for me. Great line. The great prophet must have a leak. Must have a leak. Please, someone tell me you've watched these movies. I can quote them night and day. They are so awesome. So anyway, the point being, part confession, part story. The point being this, I've totally lost my point actually. Infamy, infamy. Yes, my point being that in my life for too long, what I thought was that the choices that other people would make would rob me of my destiny in God. That people were able to rob me. And if here's the truth, that's complete bunkum. Because the call and the purpose that God has in my life and in yours is completely dependent on God and nobody else. Nobody else can steal from you. The point is, what I thought was, God allowed all this stuff in my life and God was causing it and bringing people to, you know, cause merry hell for me because somehow that's the only way that God could get through to me. And actually the Lord said, no, I never created that. I never wished it or longed for it, but I was never limited by it. And I prepared you for it. I give you all the tools that you needed. I give you all the promise that you needed and all the love that you needed. So if you stay focused, this situation, rather than you being shaken to the point of falling apart, will actually be one step closer to your destiny and your calling. The very things actually in Joseph's life that God used to bring promotion and fulfillment of the promises that God had said to him were the things in his situation, and that's another story, but I need to rush on quick. My last point is this. I'm just rounding up all the loose points that I didn't get to make in the first 2 weeks. Whatever you do, Winston Churchill said this, if you're going through hell, whatever you do, just keep going. Never, 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 never give up. Never give up. Never give up. You will be tempted to run away rather than stand in grace. You will be tempted to go, I'm too tired, I've had enough, rather than stand in grace. But let me tell you this. The safest place, and even though it can maybe overwhelming at times, it is much safer to stay in the process of character building, and in the process, even though it is hard, than to adopt a defensive or a conservative approach to your Christian life. Embrace the difficulty, and remember that it's one step towards your purpose. Bill Johnson puts it this way, the safest place that you can be is passionately pursuing the purpose of God in your life. I think that's a brilliant quote. The safest place you can be is passionately pursuing and considering your destiny in God as a king. Why? Because when you passionate pursuit, it positions you for advancement. There's a quote right there. Passionate pursuit positions you for advancement. Whenever you get defensive, you're already defeated. I guess what I'm trying to say is this. What I'm learning is this, that my destiny and everything that I need has already been supplied to me. Everything that I need to fulfill it. And the moment that I take a back seat in pursuing the kingdom of God and the purpose of God, then I make myself vulnerable to the attack of the enemy. What I have to do is remember this, is that destiny and my destiny begins in my heart. I need to protect it, and I need to passionately pursue the purpose of God for me. And you need to do it for you too. And you need to never run away from any situation or any circumstance, because as soon as you run away, whether it's in your head or in your heart, and you think, I can't do that, you've just taken a step away from God's purpose and not a step towards it. Why? Remember this. I'm going to finish right now. Just remember that everything that you will come across this week, you are prepared for. Next week, I promise, I'm going to talk about the tools that keep you connected to the heart of God, to keep you standing. But every one of you right now, I promise you this, is the heart of a good God and a heart of a good Father. You are absolutely prepared for everything that God has for you and everything that will come your way. He never sets you up to fail. Here's the point for me. I used to think that God would look into my life and go, I wonder how you'll get on. Like, let's design this set of circumstances and we'll just see. I know he loves it. And, you know, and let's just see how he gets on. And then I realized, actually, that was setting me up for failure. Until I realized this, that God never puts me in a place that I'm not prepared for. Never. He always sets me up to grow and not to fail. Stand up for me.